For today, featuring the Bible teaching ministry of Pastor Chuck Smith, founder of the Calvary Chapel Movement. This radio program is a chapter-by-chapter, verse-by-verse study through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of The Word for Today, Pastor Chuck continues his message, Power in the Church, as we pick up in Acts chapter 5, verse 11. And now, with today's study, here's Pastor Chuck.
We look at the church in its weak, anemic state. And we want to blame God. We say, well, God has withdrawn the power of the Spirit. It was only given to the church initially to give the church that first thrust. But once the church was capable of developing its own programs, establishing its own seminaries, and creating its own organizational structures, we no longer needed the power of the Spirit, but we're now able by the genius of man to carry the gospel into all the world. History itself would testify to the folly of that concept. For the early church did carry the gospel into all the world. As Paul wrote to the Colossians 30 years later, and the gospel as it has come to you, as it is in all the world. And here we are in our modern day church, seeing the gospel reaching a less proportionate area of the world every year. In 1935, some 32% of the world knew of Jesus Christ. By 1945, it was only 27% of the world knew of Jesus Christ. By 1955, it was only 22% of the world had heard of Jesus Christ. Today, they estimate that only 17% of the world has heard of Jesus Christ, and of the 50 million people being added to the earth's population every year, less than 5% of them are being reached or will be reached at our present rate with the gospel. We are in a population explosion, but it's happening in the areas where the church is not effective. In fact, in many areas where the church has been ruled out. And much of the reason why the church has been put out of areas is the hypocrisy in the church. When the church was purged and purified, it became powerful. And so we read that by the hands of the apostles were many signs and wonders wrought among the people, and they were all with one accord in Solomon's porch. This is the area where the lame man was healed. So the church continued to meet without a building, but just meeting on the public territory of the temple, there on Solomon's porch. Now of the rest durst no man to join himself to them, but the people magnified them. So this was the end of the people selling their possessions and bringing them in. After that, Ananias and Sapphira were slain by the power of God. No one dared after that to become a part of that tight community that was sharing everything in common. That ended that particular little experiment. But though they did not become a part of that tight community, they magnified them, and the believers were the more added to the Lord, multitudes, both of men and women. So there were many, many people believing, becoming Christians, but not becoming a part of that tight church community, who were sharing everything in common. Insomuch that they brought forth the sick into the streets and laid them on beds and couches, that at the least the shadow of Peter passing might overshadow some of them. Now, it doesn't say that Peter's shadow brought any healing benefits. In that culture, there was quite an interesting superstition about shadows. And they would be very careful not to get in the shadow of an evil man, because they had some kind of a superstition that if the shadow of an evil man fell on you, that some curse was going to happen to you. And thus, in turning that around, the shadow of a good man, they probably thought would bring benefits. Now, I do believe, though it is not recorded, that many of them were healed as the shadow of Peter fell on them. Else the practice would have ceased in a hurry. But I'm certain that many of them were healed, not because of any power in the shadow of Peter, but because of the principle of the releasing of faith. A point of contact where I am going to believe God to do a particular thing. When this happens, as the woman who had said, I know that if I can just touch the hem of his garment, I will be made whole. And the moment she touched the hem of the garment, she released her faith. O woman, great is thy faith. Be it unto thee even as you wish. The moment she touched his garment, she released her faith, because in her heart she had said, I know that the moment that happens, I'm going to be healed. And as she released her faith, she was healed. So the value of that point of contact to release my faith, I know that God is going to do it when. So this developed, and I know that when Peter's shadow falls on me, the Lord's going to heal me. Or the Lord's going to heal my father, or he's going to heal my brother. And so you'd carry your brother out in the street and put him on the side that the shadow would fall. You look up the sun and you know, you put him on that side and wait for the shadow to fall. And the moment it fell, you say, all right, faith released. And God responds to our faith. And so I am certain that many were no doubt healed, though it does not say that they were, as the result of releasing their faith, because they had established that point where they would. And there came also a multitude out of the cities round about unto Jerusalem, bringing sick folks and them that were vexed with unclean spirits, and they were healed every one. So the purifying of the church by the purging of the hypocrisy and the resultant power that is manifested by the church as multitudes are brought out of the cities and the villages round about Jerusalem, and they were being healed as the result of the power that was there in the early church. Sometimes my heart yearns for that kind of power to exist in the church today. However, I seriously question whether the church has the capability of handling that kind of power. It seems that in the church we're so ready to exploit anything. And I feel that it is indeed tragic to those who have had healing ministries and who have had that emphasis in their ministries. For the most part, as far as I can think in my mind, they've exploited it for their own personal benefit and gain. And I think that that is indeed tragic. But I don't know my own heart. I don't know what I would do. I really don't trust myself. If suddenly you had all of the notoriety and the fame and the acclaim that would come from having that kind of power, I really don't know my own heart if I would be capable of maintaining in my own spiritual walk. So I can't really judge these men for what they have done, because I don't know what I would do if in that same position. My father used to always pray, "Lord, do not bless me with more than what I can contain my love for you. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Poverty that I would steal, or riches that I would say, 'Who is God? I don't need him.'" Several years ago, 4 or 5, I was standing here, right where I am now, and we were in prayer together in an afterglow, just waiting upon God. And there had been, in that particular service, a beautiful move of God's Spirit through the teaching of the Word. Many people had come to respond to the message and to commit their lives to Jesus Christ. And then, as we were all just waiting upon the Lord, suddenly it was just as though it was the Lord and I here alone together and no one else was here, and I began to talk to him about how thrilled I was with Calvary Chapel and with what God had done and all of the blessings that God had bestowed upon us, just superabundant blessings of God. And I said, "Lord, there seems to be only one thing lacking as I think of the church in Acts, and that is that dynamic power to minister to the needs of the people in a physical sense, the healing and the miracles that happened in Acts. And if you would raise up someone, Lord, perhaps within the fellowship, with a gift of miracles or healing, then it would seem that we would have the Church of Acts complete." And the Lord spoke to my heart in a very powerful way. And he said, "I have given to you the more excellent way." And of course, my mind immediately flashed on 1 Corinthians chapter 12, where Paul, speaking of the gifts of healings and miracles and all, said, "Yet I will show you a more excellent way than even miracles, healings, whatever. For though I speak with the tongues of men and angels and have not love, I'm become as a sounding brass and a tinkling cymbal." And God said, "I have given you the love within the fellowship." I said, "Thank you, Lord, for the more excellent way. Help us to walk in it." And I've never asked God again for those gifts of miracles or healing as far as my own personal life is concerned. Now, there are miracles and healings that are happening here daily, but not to the extent as we find in the book of Acts. Nor do we wish to capitalize or to emphasize those healings and miracles that are taking place, lest people would be drawn only for the physical benefits and not really drawn to Jesus Christ. So I do feel that we do lack from the early church in this area, but God knows that. And why the lack exists, I'm certain, is in part or whole on our side. God's hand is not short that he cannot save. His ear is not heavy that he cannot hear. I'm certain that that environment in which these gifts should properly be exercised just does not yet exist. I'm not interested in hyped up experiences. I'm not interested in the circus environment that I observe so often within the healing meetings. I don't read these things happening in the book of Acts, and I don't feel that they are edifying or drawing attention to Jesus, but have a greater tendency to draw the attention to the man, to the instrument, God's man of the hour, the star of the fifth magnitude. Now, as a result of the popularity, there came a jealousy among the priesthood, and the high priest rose up, and all that were with him, which is the sect of the Sadducees, and they were filled with jealousy. The word indignation there is properly translated jealousy. Notice that the high priest was himself a part of the sect of the Sadducees. The Sadducees were the materialist. They were the humanist. They did not believe in spirits. They did not believe in angels. They did not believe in resurrection. And they were into the religious scene just for the bucks. And now the popularity of the disciples was a threat to them, and they were jealous. And so they laid hands on the apostles, and they put them in the common prison. But the angel of the Lord that night opened the prison doors and brought them forth and said, "Go stand and speak in the temple to the people all the words of this life." Go share with them this glorious life that you have in the risen Christ. Go right back where you were arrested. Go right back and do the very things you were doing when you were arrested. Rather than just, hey, now that you're free, escape, get out of Jerusalem, head for Caesarea, get a boat and take off for Greece, you know. Escape the persecution. No, go right back into the temple and there speak to the people the words of this life. So when they heard that, they entered into the temple early in the morning and they began to teach. But the high priest and those that were with him called the council together and all the senate of the children of Israel, and they sent to the prison to have them brought forth. But when the officers came, they did not find them in the prison, and so they reported back to them, saying, "The prison truly we found secure. It was shut with all security, safety. And the guards were standing outside before the doors. But when we opened the doors, there was no one there. They've disappeared." Now the guards were still standing there. The place was still locked. And yet when they opened the door to the inner prison, their rooms, they were empty. Now when the high priest and the captain of the temple and the chief priest heard these things, they began to wonder, boy, how, you know, what's going to come of this story now? Then one came in and told them, saying, "The men that you put in prison are standing in the temple and they're teaching the people." God's got to have a sense of humor. Here is this, you know, the joint meeting of the Senate and the House of Representatives called by the president. Got to deal with this problem. And so you send down to Leavenworth. You have the prisoners brought, you know, and they get inside and their cells are empty. And then, you know, here's this whole August assembly of the leaders, you know, ready to try these men. And here someone says, well, they're right back in the temple. They're over there teaching the people. Then went the captain with the officers, and they brought them without violence, for they feared the people, lest they should be stoned. They're excitable people over there. And as Don was sharing with you, things haven't changed much. Don stayed out of that cave or that digging in order that he would not be stoned. And when they had brought them, they set them before the council, and the high priest asked them, saying, "Did we not strictly command you that you should not teach in this name? And behold, You have filled Jerusalem with your doctrine and intend to bring this man's blood on us. You remember in the last chapter, when they were standing before the council with the lame man, they were strictly charged not to speak anymore in the name of Jesus. And Peter responded, "We cannot but speak the things which we have seen and heard." So they threatened them further and let them go. Now he brings up this. He said, "Didn't we strictly charge you not to speak anymore in this name?" And then he makes an interesting admission. "You have filled Jerusalem with your doctrine." Now that is an interesting testimony, not by the evangelist. You have to watch the testimonies of evangelists. Sometimes they are exaggerated. We used to have a term, evangelistically speaking, and it means that you blow up the figures significantly. Well, how many were there? Oh, I suppose there were several hundred. At least 25. But evangelistically speaking, you know.
We'll return with more of our verse-by-verse Bible study in the book of Acts on our next broadcast as Pastor Chuck continues to teach through the Bible. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. This message has been provided to you by the generous supporters of The Word for Today. For additional information about how you can support this ministry, please visit us online at thewordfortoday.org. There you'll find free message downloads from Pastor Chuck, as well as links to our podcast and other resources to help you grow in your Christian walk. You can also call us at 1-800-272-9673, or you can order a physical copy of today's message by mentioning Acts 5. Again, that phone number is 1-800-272-9673. Our office hours are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. If you prefer to write, our mailing address is P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. Join us again next time as Pastor Chuck continues his verse-by-verse study through the Bible. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. And now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck.
And now may the Lord help you to assimilate that which we have studied. And may He bring to your remembrance those things which He has commanded. And may you be enriched in the knowledge of God and His will and His plan for your life. May the Lord be with you, to bless you, to guide you, and may you be kept by that power of God through faith and trust in Him. In Jesus' name.
The Word for Today resource, C3000 Flash Drive, is a great way to listen to Chuck Smith teach from Genesis through Revelation, verse by verse. This digitally remastered audio was taught at Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa from the years 1985 through 1999. It includes 634 audio messages. Pastor Chuck covers Hebrew and Greek word origins, historical biblical dates and information, church history, biblical exhortations, and practical applications, and many more topics. You can order this flash drive at twft.com or by calling 1-800-272-9673. I'm your host, Kathy Parrish. Thanks for listening.
Little country church on the edge of town. People coming every day from miles around for meetings and for songs. It's not the way it used to be.
This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.